I'm here in Tallaght and I'm talking to Eddie Power. Eddie, who worked on the taxis for many years here in Tallaght, born in 1952. But where did it all start, Eddie?
Well, I grew up in Drimna, which is at the end of the road here from Tallaght, the main road out to Tallaght. And as children, we travelled out to Tallaght, out to the hills, right through our, as kiddies, which you don't do these days, 8 years old and 9 years old, we'd travel in groups of eight or nine out to the Green Hills at the end of Tallaght. And our parents would bring us there, picnicking and berry picking on the Green Hills Road. As we got older, we went ourselves to Robin Hood, down in the sand pits down there, the sand hills. And that's one side of the Green Hills Road. On the other side, we had Timlin's Castle. And we played there. We actually found a sword there when we were kiddies, and that was given to the National Museum. Brendan Brady's father brought it into the National Museum. We got a nice letter to say thank you for the sword we found. We don't know what age it was, but Timmins Castle, the ruins were still there at the time. And what's Tymond Park now was all fields, was all farms around there, farmhouses.
What was your father doing?
Oh, my father, he was actually married to my mother. That's his second wife. So we had older siblings. And their grandparents came from Tallaght Village, Newtown Park. So my father, who drove a van for Leverett and Fry, they were the Fortnum and Mason of Dublin. He delivered groceries all around the big houses of Kildare and Wicklow and Dublin. And he, at the weekends, he'd take us in the van to meet our third granny. And that was, and then he'd bring us to Borna Breena, where they originally came from. We'd go picnicking around the reservoir. So we were out in the hills around Tallaght for many, many years. And he actually cut turf in the hills up on the feather beds. And he would bring that in the winter. We always had turf to keep us warm in the winter. So he would actually bring us out on his rounds during the summer months. We had plenty of fresh air out in the...
It must have been interesting visiting these big houses.
Oh, it's fantastic.
What was his run now, his circuit?
Well, he would... he brought me out. When he brought me out, we would go along the strawberry beds out to Castleknock, the big houses in Castleknock, and then out towards Lucan. I remember sitting in a little village in Lucan there, having his lunches, sandwiches, and his cup of tea. And there was a little river. His was the only van or car in the whole area. And there was a couple of little shops and little houses there. And there wouldn't be a person around at 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the daytime. It was just a small village out in the middle of nowhere. But then we'd go on to other big houses. I was in Lady Wicklow's house. I remember... on occasion, one of the big houses where, when we drove into the yard with the groceries, the lady of the house was coming in from horse riding. The groom took the horse away and she asked my father to hang on. She wanted to have a few words with him. So we sat down in the kitchen. We got lovely fresh buns out of the oven. And she wanted all the information about everybody else in the other big houses around Dublin and Wicklow. And it was he had a lot of information from parties and things. He actually worked as a waiter part-time in a lot of the parties they gave. So
it was an interesting time when the gentry of Dublin were still very evident, you know. The grandeur and the big houses.
Yes, it was actually just before the time of the supermarkets, and the supermarket killed off my father's job. The lords and ladies went shopping in the supermarkets after that. But it was very interesting. There were, I remember though, about the areas at the time, they were all so beautifully manicured. The grass, the trees, everything looked so well, you know. I remember that about Tallaght as well. There was two factories in Tallaght. There was Glen Abbey and Orney's. But the entrance to these factories, everything was so beautifully maintained. And there was always groundsmen. There was all the compared to nowadays, they stick up a factory, and it's basically four walls and a roof. But there was a great pride in everything that was done back in those days.
And the two factories, Ernie's and
Glenabbey.
And Glenabbey, they employed quite a number of people.
Oh, all around this area, yeah. If you didn't work in one, you worked in the other. And it was an old country road, the Belgarde Road then, leading down to Newlands. When I got my first motorbike, first drive I ever did was up the Greenhills Road, through Talla Village and back down the Belgarde Road. And I had to turn back at Newlands Cross because it was actually a dual carriageway in those days. And so I came all the way back through Talla again. But past this, it's a long straight road from Talla Village down to Newlands Cross, but there was a meander in it then. And again, it was out in the middle of the country and fields everywhere. I didn't realise at the time that I'd be living just across the road from Glenabbey in Kilnamanna.
And you know, all the changes that took place, but your own growing up, I suppose you went to the local school, Christian Brothers, was it?
No, well, I eventually ended up in Christian Brothers. In Drimna, I went to the Masters. We had junior infants and senior infants. We had the nuns, and then we went over to the Masters in Morden Road School, Our Lady of Good Counsel, and wonderful teachers. How they controlled so many thousands of staff. It was the biggest school in Europe at the time, the school in Drimna, the Red Brick College, we called it. But how they controlled so many children, and they did. You know, there was discipline, but there was none of this, you know, nobody was punished for no reason at all. So I did the final year, sixth year, in St. James's School. That was because I went on then to secondary in St. James's School after that. I left school at 14. And I went on to work as a barman then. But growing up as a teenager, I was around this area a lot because I was in the Boy Scouts in Drimna. And of course, we hiked all around Talla, all up around this area. And we'd go to Massey's estate. That was our favourite. We'd take the bus out to Talla Village and then we'd have to hike. Nobody ever went for walks in those days. We always went on a hike. And we'd walk out the old Bourne Road and up the Killickey Road. And we'd be there in Massey's estate in the ruins of the mansion there. We'd play in, and the basement was still there. I remember being down in the basement running around, and there were hooks in the stone ceiling. And we were told that Lord Massey was chased by the devil through the... And that's how he was caught on one of the hooks. Of course, none of that was true. I think they were cellars for hanging meat and vegetables and things like that. But they filled them in eventually.
And the gardens. Did you see the glass houses?
No, the glass houses. I saw the base, you know, the foundations. But the trees were still there. The lovely long drive with the big trees down to the mansion were still there. And you could see the remnants of the gardens. And the... some of the outhouses where they eventually crumbled, but you could see how the gardens had been maintained up there.
And as a young lad hiking up there, was it a great day out?
Oh, it was a huge day out. You know, we were out in the middle of the country there. The water that flows through there, you could use it then for filling your billy can, boiling it on the fire and making your tea and cooking your sausages and... There was no problem with drinking water in those days. All the streams were lovely and clear. And so we'd stay up there. We hiked across to Pine Forest then, or we walked all the way to Enniskerry along the Pine Forest Road down through Glencullen, and that was some hike.
What about the Hellfire Club?
Yes, we played in the Hellfire Club, but it was always a bit open. Up on the top of the Hellfire Club, always breezy. So we'd play in the forest, and well, you know, there was, on the way back down, there was Carty's Castle, as we called it. It has several different names, but we could spend the afternoon playing around the castle there as well, then make our way back down to Talla and take the bus back down to Drimna again.
Sorry.
Yeah, Beehive Cottage was still there at the time.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I don't know. I knew there were people living there, but I don't know if it was Lord Massey himself.
Yeah.
I think he died in the late 50s. Mm-hmm. But maybe his wife was living there. But the other houses...
Were there tea rooms there at that stage?
Across the road from Beehive Cottage, there were tea rooms, but not actually in Beehive Cottage. And then Killickey House, that was an art gallery at the time. And that's the house of the ghost stories of the cat. And I still maintain to this day that I was walking around the gallery and a little old lady was walking behind me. I was being polite, or she was walking in front of me. And being polite, I waited till she looked at the picture and then she moved on and I'd look at that picture and then she moved on again and then she disappeared. And I don't know where she disappeared because there was only one way out of that room. So that was in the middle of the day, Tuesday afternoon in Killickey House. It became two rooms after, but I was out of that house like a shot.
Can you describe what you saw?
It was just a small little lady. She was in her 70s, white hair, neatly dressed, and not quite the clothes of the time. Her clothes were a bit older, but very neat clothes. And as I say, we moved through one room looking at the pictures, she moving ahead of me at each picture, then up a couple of little stairs into this next section of the house and the art gallery, and she moved on. And then I went up the steps, looked at the next picture, and then looked around and she was gone. There was no exit, no entrance, there was no windows at that part of the house. So I got out of the house as fast as possible. So it wasn't a cat that I saw up there, which is the usual ghost.
Was that upsetting for you?
At the time it wasn't, because it was the middle of the day and there was nothing upsetting about it. She was it was just a bit of a shock that she was gone. And I wouldn't have, I didn't believe in the ghost of the cat or anything else like that, but I still can't see where she disappeared.
What's the story of the ghost of the cat?
It's just a cat appears on the window up there at the back of the house looking up towards the Hellfire Club. Yeah. And I don't know if it's means anything at all. There's a meaning or heard it, but I know it is a ghost of a cat that people.
But those days of hiking and being in the Boy Scouts and they were great days.
It was marvelous. We grew up with the Scouts in our teens, and we camped in Larch Hill. That's up in Tobraddon. That's the main scouting centre up there. But from there, we used that as a base. Pine Forest was right beside it. We would go on midnight hikes to Pine Forest with our torches and make our way over to. Right across the mountains there, across the Feather Beds, down Bornabrina. We went up Mount Seskin and all the hills. We knew them all. And I was at the top of Tree Rock one Sunday afternoon, and I looked out to sea, and I could see the next island. I didn't know till after that it was the Welsh coast. You could see that far. And at the same time, I looked and saw the mountains to the north. And it was such a clear day, I'm told it was the mountains of Mourne. And I've read since that you can actually see them from the Dublin Mountains on a clear day. So I had that one spot on a Sunday afternoon where I believe I saw the Welsh coast and the mountains of Mourne.
And you went on to work where? Where was your first
job? Oh, I worked in Kimmage in a pub called the Come On Inn.
Did you emigrate to Kimmage?
Kimmage, yeah, which is it's about 2 miles away from Drimna.
pub life was where you started. Behind Pulling Pints.
Well, yeah, what was marvellous about the Come On Inn was the.
This was in Kimmage.
In Kimmage, yeah, that's Kimmage Crumlin. The Kimmage is a very old area of Dublin. Kimmage Crossroads, the shops. The crossroad is called the KCR. It's known by its initials. But the pub, anyway, was marvellous to come on in. The daytime customers would be 60s, 70s and 80s. And here was I, only 15 years old and 16 year old. And I was listening to these men, and they had herded cattle around Crumlin, around Kimmage and Terenure when they were young. They were people, that was 1966. 65, 66, and these men were in their 80s, so they'd grown up in a century before me, the 19th century, and they told me all about the houses and the roads, and they remembered Crumlin before the houses were built. There was only Captain's Lane and Stanaway Road were the only roads going through Crumlin, and the Kimmage Road, of course. But they worked on the farms, and there was a lot of brewery men drank in that pub as well, and they had stories from the inner city,
mm-hmm.
marvelous stories, all around the area of the brewery, and there was one story I'll always remember was in the pubs down there. They back in the 40s and the 50s, if you bought a pint of plain, pint of porter, you got a small glass of chat. And chat was the cheapest tawny wine, port wine, with methylated spirits in it. And that was to keep you drunk for the evening, so you'd spend more money on their porter. But they usually didn't drink it. But someone with no money in their pockets would go around and say, "You're drinking the chat." And, no, you can have it. And he'd drink it. He'd drink four or five of these, but probably end up jumping through the window out of his mind. Methylated spirits.
And would that be given out in most of the inner city pubs?
In around the brewery area, which was a very... They were all tenement houses back then.
Yeah.
So that
this
was...
This is James's Street now.
James's Street, yeah.
Like it.
And so, yeah, that's... But
that was a custom. That's...
Yeah. But right. it was great to listen to the men then, because, again, a lot of them had worked there for many, many years. Many of them fought in the Second World War as well. Left their job in the brewery, fought in the Second World War, and came back to their job in the brewery. And they would march on Remembrance Day from the brewery up to St. Patrick's Cathedral, wearing their ribbons and their puppies.
Oh, in the First World War?
And the Second World War.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it continued after the Second World War, but they were as members of the workers in the brewery, they were entitled to a lot.
Yeah. My goodness, yeah. But it was almost entertaining, your work, so that you're sitting listening to the lads.
Yeah, great stories. I really enjoyed that. But I had a motorbike at the time, so I got out around all over Dublin, mostly south side of Dublin. I learned a lot of the names of the roads, which was handy later on when I became a taxi driver. But I saw a lot of the suburbs being built then, because they only started building after the 70s. They built Drimna and Crumlin back in the 40s.
Yeah.
And then they moved out. When I grew up in the 50s, the countryside started at Walkinstown Roundabout.
Imagine, yes, yeah.
And so even in the 60s on my motorbike, I was in the countryside within a couple of minutes of leaving the pub. I'd take a break in the afternoon. I'd have a long break from 3 o'clock till 7:30. So I'd go off on the motorbike out around the mountains. I might drive to Wicklow on the motorbike before I went back to work. And go and play. The customers would play pitch and putt. They had their pitch and putt clubs back then. But these clubs were on the Green Hills Road or Bourne Abrina. And you always remember the good sunny days. So we had lots of sunny days out there. And
that was the pastime, pitch and putt.
Pitch and putt, yeah. But I still stayed with the Scouts. And any time I had a weekend off, I'd be with the lads and hiking. And when we came back after camping away for the weekend, we'd come down through Ballycullen. And at the end of the Ballycullen Road was Lena Delaney's pub. And it was wonderful of an autumn night going in there, or winter's night. And there was always the turf fire. So we sit there, 18, 19-year-olds, having a couple of pints around the turf fire, and Mr. Delaney behind the counter ordering that to stick another log on the fire or another sod of turf on the fire. And, well, that was 10 o'clock closing in those days on a Sunday night, so we'd head on down home and back to work the next day.
How long did you stay there in the pub?
In the pub, I was there 7 years. And then I moved around the corner to Premier Dairies. And I worked as a milkman for another 8 years. That was Premier Dairies in Crumlin.
And that was doing a round. Where did that take you to? Was it a big round?
I did... 3 different rounds in the inner city through the years. That would be over a 4-year period. And that was in around from Christchurch to Camden Street and up to Cranbrassil Street, New Street, and in around the Tenters. And again, there was a lot of beautiful people in around there. A lot of the people, there were still a few tenement houses there. that I delivered to. And there was no light in them. You'd have to push the big door in, run into the house with the milk, up the stairs, and the only light was from a shaft of light going up the stairs from the front door. So you had to get in and out as fast as you could, otherwise you'd trip up in the dark. But there was a couple of little shops there in under the tenement houses, the bottom of the ground floor, and they would sell coal. They sold butter in that was taken off the block with paddles and made into little lumps for selling. And they sold lump sugar. They sold the feed for the horses. And
all that would go on, would it, in these?
That was in the 70s in these houses, in these shops, yeah. And they all had wooden floors. I remember if you walked on the floor, the dust from the potato dust, the coal dust, and the dust from the horse feed would all rise as you walked across the floor of these little shops.
And overhead then the tenement houses.
Yeah, the people.
What kind of people were living there now?
There were families of 7 and 8 children and mother and father, but there were some very poor people still back then in the '70s, and eventually they were rehoused down there in those tenements were knocked down. I think they were about the last tenement houses that would have been in the area. That was Golden Lane. But there was Piles buildings across the road from that, which they were built in the early 20th century. And they were a mass concrete, two-story warren. It was a warren of little houses, little flats. And they were amazing. People lived with their curtains on their balconies and finches and little larders on their balconies and down. It was the most unusual little street I've ever seen in Dublin.
And again, the people that were there, were they a mixture?
They were all old Dublin people, old.
Were they a mixture of migrants in Dublin or all Dublin?
They would have been all Dublin people. But they were terrific people because they would never let you down. There was, when I went to collect the money, there might have been two or three people who had gone shopping. There might have been one or two people who had gone to work, but all their money was left with one person. So that woman would have the milk money, the coal money, the money for the bread man. And you never had to call back to these people. You always got your money when, the payment for your bill, when you knocked on the door. And they were marvellous, very close-knit. And they still are down around that area. There's still blocks of flats and more townhouses that the corporation have built.
Isn't that fascinating? And of course, they're all gone now, really. Their children
would still, their children would be in their 60s now.
Imagine.
So the other, yeah. But it was great to get that feeling of old Dublin, you know, close-knit community. And they were... Old Dubliners.
Yeah, when you say old Dubliners now, I mean, even your own name, Power. Power is a Waterford name, isn't it?
Well, my father said we were the tribe that got lost because we trace the family back to the 1740s in Tiknock.
Really?
Yeah. And they came eventually. The house up in Tiknock, it was a cottage. And it's still there. But I think the last Powers lived there in late in the 20th century.
What was the craft they brought with them? What were your great-grandfather?
They had a farm up there. But when the family got bigger, they moved down. And it was the countryside, Tiknock, then. They moved down to Rathmines. And they lived in rented rooms in Rathmines. And... they then got my great-grandfather. He worked on the railways. That's the Harcourt Street line. And his son, my grandfather, he worked for Rathmines Corporation. And they got a house right behind Rathmines Town Hall, Gulliston Cottages. Mm-hmm. Small two-bedroomed house where they raised 14 children and took in rarens. Rarens were... foster children.
Did they?
Yeah.
And what did that entail?
I don't know how they fitted so many people into the house. But
did they get paid to...
They got paid so much per week for these children. And on the my mother's side as well, they out of Borna Breena direction, going back, my mother didn't come from Borna Breena. Her grandmother came from Borna Breena, but they took in rarons as well. And they were paid for looking after, for fostering these children.
Yeah. And that was called rarons.
Yeah. As raring.
Yes.
So they were called rarons.
And they obviously were children who were born outside of wedlock. A lot of them, would they be out of big families that couldn't afford to keep them?
Yeah, big families that couldn't afford to keep them. There were orphans as well, but instead of them being adopted, they would have been fostered out.
And when you think of bringing up such a large number of children in one house, and they were small houses, most of them.
Just two-roomed house, cottages. They're still there. They're still there in Rathmines. But my grandfather, as I say, he worked for the corporation. He got a bigger house in Kimmage then later on, a three-bedroomed house in Kimmage. I think that was around 1910. And
so really moving up in the world.
Yes.
Yes. And then how many children did your grandfather, it was a big family?
Yeah, there was 12. My grandfather had 14 children altogether.
And what was his wife? You mean?
She was a normal housewife. She.
But what was her maiden name?
Oh, Mary Mahon.
Mahon.
Yeah.
Well, and she reared 14 and had 14 children. My
yes,
God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Including the other children that she brought in.
But and all her own children, they all lived to... My father, he died at 66, but he died of cancer. But most of her other children lived to their 80s and 90s. Mm. Well, so I hope I live as long as that.
But moving on from there...
As I say, they came from Tiknock, which is only in the eastern side of the Dublin hills. Always Dublin. You say we're from Waterford, but we trace it back to Dublin, the hills of Dublin.
Yeah.
And then my mother's family, my grandmother's was, she was born in Cork, but her father was from Borna Breena.
What was her name?
Ryan. Her father lived in Edmundstown in Rathfarnham. And so we have the mountains too.
Indeed.
And as I say, we always specify the Dublin mountains as opposed to the Wicklow mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
Born inside the border.
So we're working in the pub then for how many years altogether?
I worked there in the pub for 7 years and then the Premier Dairies for 8 years. Yeah, the 70s was a great time until I was going to get married. I was working in the Premier Dairies and... I went out to look at this house in Springfield, which was wonderful at the price, £5,000, but it was way out in the countryside, and I would have had to cycle.
And that would have been really tough to get in.
You would have to cycle down the country road through the village of Talla and all the way down to Crumlin after that, Kimmage. That wasn't a good idea at 5 o'clock in the morning, or 3 o'clock in the morning, sorry. And so the next year I bought a house in Kilnamanagh, which was £7,000, but that was on the Green Hills Road and much closer to Crumlin and closer to my parents and my wife's parents as well. But there was great entertainment around at the time. We were in our new house and we went out at night time. The Cuckoo's Nest was across the road and that was a good pub for going and meeting all the neighbours, but there was the embankment out past Talla and Mick McCarthy on the embankment at the time, a great ballad pub. People came from everywhere to the embankment and for 6 shillings you could see the Dubliners or Paddy Riley, Anne Bourne, Paddy Roach. There was great entertainment out there for a whole night. And then in the village itself we had the Foxes Covert and they had cabaret in there. And
what kind of cabaret?
Well, we had Sandy Shaw won Puppet on a String. She won the Eurovision with Puppet on a String. And we had Sandy Shaw down in Talla Village in our cabaret venue down there. So everybody had to see Sandy Shaw, but that later turned into a nightclub, or no, it was a disco bar, and still had the cabaret, and people would come out of there at night time and they'd take taxis out across the hills. There was nightclubs out around Taylor's, that's Marley Grange. There was further on to Leopardstown, there was the Leopardstown Club 92, it's called now. It was in the race course. There was Green Acres, which was in Stocking Lane, and then on down to Stillorgan. That's where all the nightclubs were, and the ones in town then as well. So there was great entertainment back in the 70s out there. But then I was in Kilnamana, and the houses, again, built in fields, built on a farm, and I lived in Redwood, and there was no road through from Greenhills Road to Belgard Road then. There was just the road into the estate, and I was able to look out from my front window across the fields to Talla Priory, and that was before Jacobs built their factory there. And they had their pitch and putt club there, but Jacobs built their factory and it got bigger and bigger and spoiled my view of the priory.
Yeah.
So,
but anyway, it's extraordinary. You would have seen Talla grow out of all proportions.
Well, I watched Kilnamana being built because I got a new round as a milkman in Kilnamana. So I was delivering milk to all my neighbours down there, and I saw the houses built by Brendan McGowan. They built 1,500 houses, the biggest estate, private estate in the whole of Europe at the time. And I saw people getting lost in the estate in the middle of the night while I was delivering milk because, as I say, there was no ring roads, and they were trying to get out and they were getting stuck in fields and mud. One taxi driver offered me money one night to drive in front of him to get him out. I saw Kilnamana develop down there. It was marvellous.
What was it, you know, did you find yourself, because you took on taxi driving then, didn't you?
Yeah, which was, I was made redundant as a milkman around 1984. And so I'd been living in Kilnamana for 10 years. And I saw Dunn Stores being built there. And so as a taxi driver, I just had to drive down the road from the house and start work outside Dunn Stores. We had a taxi rank there. And Dunn Stores took over from H. Williams in the village and Super Quinn down in Walkinstown as the main shop for the whole of Talla. Because when people moved to Talla originally in Springfield or Kilnamana, there was another estate in Talla Village and the houses out in Old Bon. They had to do their shopping in the H. Williams supermarket in the village, or travel all the way down to Super Quinn. So those Dunn Stores was a huge thing. People came from all over to shop in Dunn Stores, and they came from Clondalkin, and they'd no shopping centres out in Clondalkin. So they came from Palmerstown, and a lot of them came by bus and wanted a taxi home.
My goodness,
so it was great.
And how did you find, as you said yourself, going into the estate here, that was there any thought given to the planning of the estate?
Well, the original, back in the 70s, it was a lot of, I think 80%, up to the mid-80s, 80% of the houses in Talla were privately owned. And the council here built many housing estates, you know, 20% of the houses. But then Talla West, the corporation bought the land out here. And Killinarden Estate was built by the council. And it was there was great community spirit, because all these people belong to Talla. They've grown up in Talla or Walkinstown or around the area. Everybody knew each other. So I was bringing people home from Kilnamana Shopping Centre. And I knew a lot of the people, or knew their families. And because the council were housing them from their own council area, which was Walkinstown and Greenhills and Talla. Then the corporation, they took over a big part of West Talla. And they built houses. And they moved people out from the inner city, way out to the country, according to them. But they didn't build the facilities for them. And so these people, there was a lot of muck and mud and building going on out in West Tala, and it was the people had to build their own communities out there because they, I don't think they got too much help from the corporation. They might have got a shop thrown in, but it was only when the churches and the schools came along that they
that it gave them some kind of a centre and a community.
So and a lot of them moved back to as soon as they could to the inner city. So there was a big movement in the communities out there. They were nice people, lovely people. As I said, I knew all the people in the inner city from delivering the milk, but a lot of them seemed lost out there. And to go and visit their parents was a huge big trek, waiting for the bus, which came twice a day to bring them back down to the city to see their parents or even to the other side of the city. But eventually, a lot of them settled down, and there was a lot of people who had lived in other parts of Dublin, took these houses from the corporation. A lot of people moved from Ballymun back to this area because they originally came from the south side of the city.
Why would people want to come out here?
Well, the people who moved back from Ballymun were originally from Ballyfermot or Crumlin, and when they got married, they were housed out there. So that's where they moved back out to Tala to be closer to their own families. Mm. So the communities really built up around then. There was a lot of community centres, and we had a terrific community down in Kilnamanna. As the kiddies grew up, the schools were marvellous. Mr. McMahona was head teacher down in the boys' school. Miss Bennett was head teacher in the girls' school. And we had to get mass in the schools there before the church was built. Father Scannell built the church. He built the schools as well. But there was a great, great community down there. And we had the biggest summer project. The biggest seems to go with me. Biggest summer project in the whole of the country, because the people who moved in, it was 1,500 houses, so there was a lot of talented people moved in, and they decided they'd have summer projects for their children. And for the whole month of July, the children were entertained with in the evening time with shows and bingo and talent contests. In the daytime, they could go on trips to Clara Lara, out to Howth, mm-hmm. The zoo, the cinema. There was always something to entertain. And there were so many people involved down there. It was a lot of the people with jobs like myself. I was a milkman, so I had the daytime off, so I could go on trips with the kiddies. They needed so many adults to go with them. And
would you help out?
It was right through the month of July. I love the month of July because I was able to travel through all the different centres out on the bus trips. And the kiddies had a great time. And to raise money for this, they had to pay a nominal fee for each of these trips. We found if you charge nothing, that they were more inclined not to turn up. But if you charge something,
yeah,
very nominal fee, they turned up to get their money's worth. but it costs more than that. And to raise money for that, we had fairs at the weekend, and we'd have music in the school. The school has a natural amphitheatre. You know, we could sit on the grass, which rose up to the church, and look down at the schools. And they had up on the back of a truck, you'd have the Dublin City Ramblers playing away, and they'd have stalls and bring them by, and they had a marvellous way of raising money. But another way of raising the money down there was the Lord Mayor contest. The person who raised the most money for the summer project was made Lord Mayor for the year. And we had many of the citizens down there got involved in this, and we had some great people.
And so with that kind of spirit, community spirit, you would have seen clearly the way that people lived and the kind of places they worked, the places they went for entertainment. Because of your own job, being a taxi driver, you would have taken people to and fro to these places. So what's the overall view? I mean, could you give me an idea of where they were going, what they were doing?
Well, most of the daytime, work was from the shopping centre, and they would travelling out to the estates. There was no bus service, no good bus service around Tala. So they had to take taxis with their shopping. They could walk down, but they couldn't carry the groceries all the way home. So they would get together two or three neighbours and travel down to do their shopping and travel home together. And sometimes they would give their lists of groceries, and two women would do the shopping for four or five people and sort it all out when they got home. So I had a boot full of groceries travelling home. But when they went out at night, there was only a few pubs around. It was Bridget Burke's in Old Bon. That was another cabaret venue. And a sing-along. Didn't have karaoke back then, but you'd have someone on a piano and drums and a guitar, and people got up and sang. And there was Burke's, there was the Fox's Covert, there was the Embankment, then the Cuckoo's Nest. But they travelled into town. There was the pubs down around Wexford Street, and again there was singing, and there was still dance halls. So you could have a couple of pints in the pub in down around Camden Street, and then walk around to the television club that was owned by Eamon Andrews, and see all the big show bands there, Joe Dolan and the Drifters, and so that still hadn't died out in the early 70s, but it was being taken over by the discos and the then. So I was bringing people to all these venues, but then at night time, really the nightclubs would close at 2 o'clock. But then if you had been to a wedding or something like that, you went on to Leeson Street after that, and there was over 20 wine bars in Leeson Street, and people would dance there till 6 or 7 in the morning. And there was some of them, if you stayed after 7 in the morning, they gave you a free breakfast. But we've just had a rugby international weekend gone by, and when the Triple Crown, back in the 70s, we had the Triple Crown, and people came from all over the country and stayed for a long weekend in Dublin for the Triple Crown rugby match. The other team from Scotland or Wales, they brought all their supporters over to Dublin, and there was a marvellous weekend where Leeson Street would be so crowded that you couldn't drive through it. It's a good wide street, but there'd be so many people in Leeson Street you couldn't actually drive through Leeson Street at 3 or 4 in the morning. So we'd have to pick up people off Leeson Street Bridge and bring them home to their hotels and back to the house. Oh,
so that was one of the great highs.
Oh, it was terrific. And it was just after the you know, Christmas time, everybody had used up all their money. So January, money was scarce. There weren't too many people using taxis then. So when it came to the first or second week of February, and we had the Rugby International, suddenly the big buzz started, and it got everybody out and about again, enjoying themselves. It was marvellous. Yeah. But
what were the other highs you had? You know, the highs in your business where you would have seen such crowds on the streets and such activity.
Well, the Celtic Tiger, the real Celtic Tiger, as I call it, was the 80s weren't great in this town. With the taxi now, I could be sitting around for 3 or 4 hours at, you know, from 1 o'clock in the morning till maybe 5 o'clock in the morning, just hoping to get one last fare so that I could go home and eventually give up and go home, because unemployment was very bad. And so the 90s came along, and people started moving back to the country, people who had emigrated to America and Australia and Europe, and businesses were starting. The IT business and the computer business was starting. And people came back from all over the world, but they brought back with them people from Portugal and Australia and America. They were all young. They were all in their early 20s. And they all had great jobs here, and they were earning good money. And streets just seemed to be crowded with young people in their 20s enjoying themselves. And they would have parties, Portuguese parties, and people, you know, or the next weekend could be Spanish parties, and these were thrown in their houses or their flats, or they'd rent a small hall down in Francis Street. So there was great gaiety, there was great colour, and for these parties, they dress up in their
their traditional Portuguese dresses and clothes, and Peruvians. People came from South America. I met people from all over the world in those days, and all young.
Was this all in the 80s?
Late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And that was, when they talk about the Celtic tiger, the cope, that's to me, was the time. Later on, the business, the factories got bigger and more people came. But the people were older that came then, and there wasn't the gaiety in the streets. The streets at night time were just packed with people. And this was right through the week. And the companies, they were finding it hard to get people to work in their businesses. So to keep their people there, they would bring them out once a month for a meal and a night out. And the group leader would be given the credit card, and he was to entertain them all for the night and send them home safely in taxis. And Ericsson from Sweden, I think, they used to send their people over to be trained over here. And we'd meet them at the airport, and we'd be given an envelope with an address on it, and the taxi fare was in it. They knew exactly how much it was to bring four people to. And I was just on the rank, you know. I was the next taxi up, and the manager who was managing them from Ericsson's would hand me an envelope with an address, four customers, the keys of the house, and the taxi fare. And we'd bring them to all over the city, and it was great telling them all. They'd ask us where were the best pubs and where were the best clubs and where could you go swimming and what was the sea like for swimming in. And they heard so many stories about Dublin in those days,
yeah,
that they all wanted to come and live over here. And Ericsson's, people had a choice of either going to Miami or Dublin for 6 months training. They all chose Dublin because this was the young city.
It was the new lively city.
Oh yeah.
And
well, people came back from all over the world with all their ideas that they'd picked up. These were people who left college and went straight to America to their brothers and sisters in America or Australia, and then they all came back and they had such wonderful new ideas, and there was new businesses opening up, and suddenly there was cafe lattes. And
but Dublin city itself had started to take on a new look.
Yes, it did.
There was new places opening all the time.
Well, when I first started in the taxi business, we bring people from the airport, and it was a bit embarrassing seeing the houses in Dorset Street falling down. One taxi driver used to tell them it was from the Second World War where we were bombed. But they started knocking down the derelict houses and rebuilding, and it was marvellous to see the clean-up of the city. Mm. And even down... as a milkman, I was able to see the backs of the houses. You could drive along a street which looked fine, but as you deliver into smaller houses at the back of Georgian houses, you'd see they were propped up with big steel stanchions and wooden stanchions, and it was as if the city was waiting to be rebuilt. They were just holding on there, and suddenly the money was pouring in, and they were rebuilding and building all around the city centre. They're building.
And Temple Bar came on the scene then.
Yeah, well, all along the quays there, it was very, very derelict. And it was actually one part of the quays was used as for a film they were making about London during the Blitz, because it was so derelict they could. So they started rebuilding along the quays and moving into Temple Bar. And Temple Bar was a warren of factories, of suit factories, clothes factories. The Projects Art Centre moved from King Street down there. They took over one of the warehouses. And then other warehouses, as the factories closed down, sewing was no longer a business. They were no longer making suits and clothes in around the centre of the city. And the small warehouses became available. And that's when the artists moved in. They started using them as studios. So that was when Charles Haughey got the idea of having a West Bank. And CIE had already bought up a lot of the area. They were going to knock it all down and build a bus station. And Charlie Haughey, no matter what people say about him, had a couple of good ideas, and he decided to turn a Temple Bar into the West Bank of Dublin, much the same as Paris.
It turned out to be a great success.
Well, the artists moved on. It was no longer cheap to rent studio space there, but there's still galleries, and the photographic museum is in there, and there's shops in there. There's small shops and there's big shops, and there's but mostly cafes, restaurants, nighttime music. And
is there a danger that it, with the Celtic Tiger, as you saw it coming in, that Dublin started to maybe lose a little bit of its, you know, its real Dublin-type people, that it got diluted with all the other things?
There was when I started driving the taxi, from working in different pubs, or I worked in several different pubs around the town, but I knew families from Ballyfermot, families from Artain, families from around Baggot Street, but families from Talla. But then it got bigger and bigger, and people moved into the city, and I would know people driving them home in the factory, in the taxi, from their name, and I'd ask, do you know such a person, and do you know such a person, and I'd know their families. And but then it got bigger and bigger, people moved in from all over the world, and it's no longer the same. I used to know the gangsters in town, because gangsters were families as well. And then the drugs moved in, and more people got involved in crime, and you just don't know who's who anymore. But that's one part of Dublin getting bigger. But it's just so many people moved in that and moved into the centre of the city and moved into the old areas, that I could no longer say, oh, you're from Ballyfermot, do you know such and such a person? Because they don't anymore.
When did the drug, you know, you saw that culture come in as well.
Well,
the drug culture.
Yeah, when the derelict houses were along the quays, the derelict buildings, the youngsters were sniffing glue in there. And that was really what I saw as the start of the drugs. There was always cannabis around. And the Mockies, which was the drug squad for the guards, they would raid clubs in Leeson Street looking for people with smoking cannabis. And everybody, what was funny in those days was everybody got dressed up to go out. You wore a suit, shirt and a tie. And to mingle with the crowds, these guys wore parka jackets, beards, long hair. So everybody knew they were the drug squad straight away. But then from the glue sniffing, then you could see the heroin moving in. And
where was it coming from? From England mostly, was it? Or
well,
you know, it would come across, and nothing, obviously.
Yeah, I only noticed it in small estates. Mostly, they would be flat complexes, and around different, the inner city flat complexes. And that's when we start first noticing junkies. And then I realized after a while, I didn't have to fear junkies, because when they got a taxi, they had their money. And they wanted to go and get their fix as quickly as possible. So they didn't want any trouble. So if I thought they were giving me any grief, I could say to them, I'm getting the guards. And they'd be out of the taxi like a shot, because they didn't want any guards. They needed to get their fix. So even when they got their fix, if I got them into the car by mistake and realized this guy is carrying some drugs, again, I had no problem, because they wanted to get out and get somewhere and get shoot up. And then they were out of the scene for the night. The next morning, I didn't work morning, so I didn't have to worry. They'd be up worrying about where they were going to get their next fix from. They were robbing handbags or whatever like that. So once I realized there was no real fear from the heroin addicts, that there was no problem in the taxi, they moved on to the different drugs, the ecstasy. They were all, when they took that, they were as happy as Larry. They loved everybody. And then it got, so there was nothing to worry about with people taking ecstasy. It was only when the cocaine came in, and you can see that look in somebody's eyes. He's wearing a suit. He's been out working all week. instead of going to the pub and having a couple of pints of lager with his mates, he'll have 2 pints of lager and a line of coke. And then he has this look about him that he either wants to do another week's work or kill somebody. And it's a dangerous, that's what the danger is with cocaine. The other drugs were all quite, they were either chilled out on cannabis or happy as Larry on ecstasy or in a corner hidden somewhere with their heroin, you know, but this, it only got dangerous with the cocaine. So we had those problems in the taxi all over the city. Yeah. But that's, again, as I say, along the quays we saw that. But then the Temple Bar got huge. It became a very, very popular place for stag parties and all like that. And a lot of the people who came for the stag parties, they came from all over England. They were marvellous people. They were terrific. And Father Ted was big on the television at the time. And these guys, they would, you'd have 4 people in the taxi and they'd all take a part out of Father Ted. They knew it by heart. They knew an episode of Father Ted by heart. And one would do Father Jack, the other would do Dougal, the other would do Ted. And they knew all the lines. They just loved everything Irish at the time. then others came after that and there was a bit of trouble around Temple Bar. But that's gone. They don't have the big stag parties anymore. The clubs wouldn't let big crowds in anymore. So it wasn't worth the while coming over as 20 or 30 of a group because they'd be split up during the night.
But, you know, your life is incredible. I mean, you've got such a great interest in your own people and your roots. And you know, the very fact that you're based and working and living with the people. And you consider yourself an out-and-out Dubliner then?
Yeah, well, oh, definitely. And I loved working in the taxi, talking to all the Dublin people, but hearing all the stories from all over the world. And then as a teenager with my motorbike, I used to travel all over the country, travel all over Scotland. And I'd have people in the taxi who tell me they came from Gweedore or Killybegs or Dingle. And I'd been through it as a teenager. So I'd ask, is this still there? And there was a great connection. And there's no connection now with a lot of the people because I don't speak Lithuanian and they don't speak. So there is that at the moment, that people have come from all over the world, but there isn't the same connection.
But you love your job and you're very connected with it. But you had a little bit of, I suppose, the bad luck in your life in the sense that you were divorced from your own wife.
That's back in the mid-90s, yeah. But I didn't, I lived in Kilnamana, bought the house 35 years ago. And I stayed in Kilnamana. I bought another house in Kilnamana because I like the area so much. I love living in Tallaght. I love the people in Tallaght. And it's actually still got that same feeling around Tallaght, you know, still know the people and know their families.
Have you a family yourself?
Oh, all my children are grown up. There's 2 girls in their 30s. They're married with children. My son is 28. He's getting married this year. So that's the 3 children, all well looked after, all working away. And so I'm looking after myself now and I'm back in college studying after all these years. I left school at 15, but I was always interested in studying. I got involved in the drama in Kilnamana, so I learned a lot from the drama. I ran football teams down there, but finally got to the stage where I'm looking after myself and back in college studying in history out in Maynooth.
Yeah, well, Eddie Power, it's been an incredible journey. Great story. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's great.